Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, as always, your host. I am joined by a very special returning guest, a friend of the channel, Mark from the Arsenal Match Reaction Show. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Rav. It's lovely to be back and really enjoying your show at the moment. So it's an honour to be a guest.
Oh, mate, thank you so much for that. That is awesome. So for listeners who might have heard a familiar voice, yes, Mark and I have collaborated before. It was some months ago now. It was way back in August. And I remember we were just actually joking about it offline. I remember we spoke in Bali when I was in Bali. And at the time, I had somehow managed to scramble together a little office at the back of the reception. The kind hotel staff very kindly accommodated. I recorded it on my phone. And somehow, some way, mate, we made it happen. And it turned out half decent.
Yeah, we did. It was good.
So this time we are back in a more formal setting and look, there's so much to talk about. I mean, just the buzz around Arsenal at the moment, I can feel it. I can feel it all the way over here in Melbourne. And for listeners who may not be familiar with you, Mark, you've had a recent rebranding as well in terms of your show, your channel. Would you mind just recapping for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, Rav, I'm the Arsenal Match Reaction Show on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. But I used to be Arsenal Unfiltered. And the original idea around Arsenal Unfiltered was taking off some of the filters from the club. But I just felt like actually I'd done it a year. I'd done the show a year. And what I really loved talking about was the football and less of the background stuff. So I wanted to kind of rebrand and make sure that everyone knew the show is about the matches. You know, we are far more focused on that now. So I do kind of preview shows, instant reaction shows available to everyone, and then match review shows as well. They all have a slightly different tone, but basically the idea now is to kind of extend and enhance everyone's match day experience. You know, you can get, while you're getting excited about it, you don't have to listen to Sky Sports. You could throw me on and listen to my voice, and you don't have to listen to the Sky Sports reaction here in the UK. After the fact, you can throw on the instant reaction and enjoy it a little bit further. So that's the idea. And the Arsenal Match Reaction Show is where you'll find me. Excited to be here today on the Real Arsenal Deal.
So, mate, I've got all your links saved. Your Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts will all be in the show notes in the description. So I implore anyone who's familiar with my channel listening to this, please go listen to Mark's content. If you haven't already, please follow. What I really appreciate is just like Mark covered, it's just nice to have just some more sensible voices out there. What I have found, and I've spoken about it multiple times, even though I'm all the way over here in Melbourne, I can feel there's such an intensity in and around Arsenal at the moment, the pressure cooker. I know there's a lot of others. There's a lot of narratives that people are just kind of waiting for over there in the UK. And being London-based, being a match-going fan, as you are, I love hearing these sorts of experiences, by the way. But there's a tangible expectation around Arsenal this season. And there's even just almost as if people are queuing up for Arsenal to stumble and fall. And I guess I'm in a privileged position being all the way over here that I can limit or reduce, I guess, that exposure to it. But Michael, what's it like currently, the temperature around Arsenal, the expectations? Can you elaborate, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The expectation has never been higher inside and outside the club, I think. You think of the players that we've signed over the summer, the way we've started the season as well. I know there were some criticisms about the Liverpool-Manchester City game and the selections and stuff, but that's really, I think, all you can criticise Arsenal for this year. And even then, it's quite, I think it's a discussion as opposed to, yeah, we clearly got that wrong. So yeah, there is a huge internal expectation. Let's start there, I guess, in terms of a lot of people have been talking about the atmosphere in the ground recently and saying, you know, it's not as good as it was in 22-23. That's the one they keep comparing it to. And for me, that definitely comes down from the fact of we're looking at our team now and going, yeah, we should be beating Atletico Madrid and we should be beating teams 5-0, 3-0 like we have done so far this season. External right now, I guess, is not too bad because we are on such good form. Like, and we're not just picking up wins, we're picking up quite comprehensive wins, if you ask me. Even the Fulham game where it was 1-0, you know, I was a little bit concerned with our central progression and stuff like that. But Fulham didn't have a shot on target. So we are picking up really comprehensive results. And I think externally in the media are really struggling to find things to to kind of beat Arsenal with right now. I know that will change. A bad result, a draw, you know, a draw at Crystal Palace this weekend. And everyone's talking very, very differently because it's so reactionary out there at the moment. So, you know, we just have to enjoy it as it comes, I think. The squad, the position we've been in, the kind of progress we've made, I don't think it's ever been better for maybe 20 years, you know. So let's enjoy it and I guess enjoy the pressure. Pressure is a privilege, and let's go and get it done, hopefully.
Because this is the position we want to be in. We have been building and building. It's funny you mentioned that 22-23 season because you're actually wearing the shirt as well. For those watching on YouTube, I look back so fondly on that season. It still is, of course, but that season was just so joyous. It just felt like we had the freedom to play and go for it. It was almost like a free hit. But having said that, when we got ourselves into the position that we did, it was just, you look back on it now and think it's a combination of a few things. We may not have actually been ready, if that makes sense. I just don't think we were poised to handle that expectation that comes with. And expectation's a big theme that we're all sort of talking, all Arsenal fans are talking. How do we manage that? Noting that at the time of recording, it's October, right? In an excellent position, no doubt. We haven't even really got into the Atletico Madrid result, 4-0. And we're sitting in a nice position on top of the table with a couple of points lead. But there's 8 league matches played. The medals aren't given out now. We got to stay focused. Everything that I'm hearing from the club suggests that it's such a different mentality now compared to 3 years ago when maybe they will never say this publicly, but maybe we didn't expect even to be in that position. Like, so it's just a great time to be an Arsenal fan. I say that repeatedly, the buzz, the energy there in London. How far away are you from the Emirates, Mark? How far do you live?
About an hour, but I am moving closer, which is good. So that's exciting. Hopefully,
when are you moving?
Midweek tickets. We're not sure yet. December, January time. So hopefully, I'll catch some, tickets on the ticket exchange for some of the games in the second half of the season, and be able to just jump down there nice and easy. So yeah, it's very exciting.
I hear that all the time. Just how hard it is to get a match day ticket for the real big hot matches. I imagine it's how many typically would you be able to get to per month, I guess?
Oh, I mean, I'm only a Red member, so it's a real struggle. It's different at different times of the year, to be honest with you, Rav. So I've got tickets for the Brighton game, the Carabao Cup game, which I'm really excited for. So that should be good because I'm excited to go and see maybe a slightly rotated team. See players like Hincapié, White.
Hincapié, just going to say.
Yeah, a couple of players who we haven't seen much this year. I hope we see Ethan Wanyeri in that game. But yeah, and then, you know, when you get to the crux of the season and the end of the season, people aren't throwing those on ticket exchange if there's still something to play for. Do you know what I mean? So you're in the ballots, you're beholden to the ballots, and that is a lottery. It can change every season depending on how well we're doing, how well we're playing. So yeah, it's very different around different times, I guess.
Yes, big time. The hope for fans in similar positions is that if we keep doing our thing, get the job done in the Champions League, those final few Champions League matches out of the I think they call it the league stage now, but it's always the group stage to me. But if we've got the opportunity to rotate a little bit towards the end, if we've qualified, we've done the job. I imagine matches of that sort of stature, with all due respect to the opponents, of course, those are the ones that would most commonly you'd see some availability for tickets.
100%. If you can't get a ticket to Arsenal and you really struggle, that Kairat Almaty game at the end of the Champions League phase, you'll get a ticket. Like, people will be looking to recoup their money off their season tickets, and they will be on the ticket exchange. So that is one you can almost certainly say you'll be able to get to the Emirates and enjoy a match day, I would say. It will be a very available ticket, that one.
If I could snap them up, I would. It's funny, a pretty consistent conversation. My youngest son especially, he's 6, turning 7 in a couple of months. He's asking me pretty consistently, when can we go? When can we go?
It's on the cards.
I'm hoping in the next 12, 18 months we can make that type of journey. Just the logistical challenges of traveling with young kids to go all the way to London and back and to do it. We're going to do it properly. We're going to spend a considerable amount of time in the UK, in Europe, make it a really, really worthwhile trip. And I'll try and get to as many matches as I can. So watch this space on that one, Mark. I might have to bail you up again offline. How do I go about getting a ticket? Because I'm going to need a little bit of help on that. So getting back to expectation. Well, actually, you know what? We can tie this in with the chat around Atletico Madrid. I didn't expect that I expected that we're going to win. I did not expect it to be 4-0. It's the type of win people are sitting up to taking notice now of Arsenal, right? Obviously, within football, within Europe, there's a lot of respect towards Arsenal. You hear the way opposition coaches talk about Arsenal, Arteta especially. You hear the players talk about how difficult Arsenal are as an opponent. But a win like that, all of a sudden, even Simeone himself was very glowing in his praise, said Arsenal are the best team they have faced so far this season. So this, what we're building to right now, it's something special. And it sounds really strange to say, I don't want to come across too entitled or anything, but with how we've invested, how we've built, how much squad depth we now, we really should be gunning for the Champions League. And it sounds mad and interesting because we've never won it. Mm. We should be gunning for the Champions League and the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Like, it's difficult to say, I think, that out loud. So fair play to you. But like, it is very much a position of privilege where we can sit there and say, do you know what, with the manager that we've got, with the players that we've got, and let's not forget, we invested heavily this summer, but we have invested heavily for probably 3 years now. Yep. Yes, we had that one year where it was like our PSR year, our kind of financial control year, but we still brought a lot of players in. We just sent a lot of players out as well. So it's a real privilege that we're able to say this, because in the early Emirates era, right, our board wasn't investing or wasn't able to invest, maybe is a fairer way to put that. And we couldn't even dream of saying things like, yeah, we should be gunning for the Champions League. You know, we were hoping for an FA Cup. We were hoping to get a League Cup. It's a really strange position for us to be in. It's not one we've been in for a very long time. I think for me, the thing with the Champions League is I'm so torn on the Champions League, right? Because on one hand, I look at our squad and our ability to grind it out with the best of them. And sometimes in the Champions League, you need to go and get a gritty 1-0 victory, maybe away from home, or even a gritty draw away from home, and then beat a team, you know, in the knockout legs back at your place. So I think, wow, that's incredible. We have probably the best squad for that sort of game, that sort of result. You know, the tenacity our squad shows, our ability to get set piece goals as well. And on the other hand, it's a cup competition. Anything can happen. You are unfortunately, at the kind of the will of referees, random chance, variance. Yes. Whereas in the Premier League, you play out 38 games and the best team definitely wins it. So
yes, the table doesn't lie, as they say.
Table doesn't lie, no. So I feel weirdly maybe more confident about the Premier League, because I do think we are at least one of the best teams. Champions League, you can have an off day and it can go wrong. So, but that's not to say we can't win either or both. You know, there's tons going in our favour, and we're so lucky to sit here and be able to say, yeah, we've got a really good shot at both. I think we're bookies' favourites for both right now, which makes me a little nervous. But you know,
isn't it wild how just 3 to 4 weeks ago, and I know you spoke about it as well with your content, just the way we ended that sequence just before the first international break, that draw against City, question marks over that first half and selection, and then losing to Liverpool like we did. And just that oversaturated narrative that comes out from it. And then you kind of have to put up with that for 10 days, 14 days until the next match. And then fast forward, the sequence we've had since has been phenomenal. It's been absolutely outstanding. And all of a sudden we go from, oh, okay, Arsenal, are they going to be also rans again? You know, this is why they always finish second, blah, 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 handbrake this, all that stuff, right? Just I try and, as much as I can, limit myself from the exposure to that consciously. You can't escape it. Even all the way over here, like every time I look online in the places that I explore, you see it referenced, even in response to it, because even big Arsenal content creators such as Arsblog, Arsenal Vision, I'm sure we all sort of look up to the same voices. You can't not completely eliminate it. And then fast forward to now, and then just like you said, then the bookies have us favourites, and anything can and will still happen. Just how it swings, so how it fluctuates so much from week to week, month to month, and it's only October, mate. It's going to be, there's a long, long way to go.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I do kind of think it's right that now people are talking about us as really, really strong contenders. I think that should have been the case the whole time. What we saw in the criticism for the Liverpool-Manchester City game was just that kind of, you know, they rewrite the narrative whenever they want, don't they? Jamie Carragher has recently said, he's recently said, why didn't Liverpool just dig in for a draw against Manchester United? And I'm telling you, if Arsenal had done that, the criticism would be incredible. And I think another narrative that changed is, you know, Arteta has been criticised before about his substitutions and not getting his substitutions right. We've seen multiple times this year him get his substitutions right, come on, influence a game, or the players come on and influence a game. And now they just switch it to, well, he's getting his starting 11 wrong then, isn't he? You know, and it's like, well, the bloke can't win, can he? You know,
he cannot win.
I think it's always interesting to look at how other teams or other teams' fans or the media view Arsenal. It's really important because, you know, I'm guilty of rose-tinted glasses when it comes to the club. So it's a useful barometer, but you've got to take it sometimes with a pinch of salt because, like you say, it swings and changes so much. Now it's, wow, Arsenal have it all to lose, you know, and we're forgetting that Liverpool broke the British transfer record twice this summer.
Exactly.
Now, I'm not going to say Arsenal because I've already said it, but like, imagine if Manchester United had done that. The scrutiny on Manchester United would be unbelievable. I barely hear it mentioned in terms of Liverpool. So, you know, we've got to remember that there are just certain narratives and storylines that the media want to tell because we're a passionate fan base who a lot are online. And like yourself, we have a very global fan base who engage via the internet, via the media. So they know the fan bases that are out there and where they are. You know, there are clubs like Arsenal, Manchester United, I think, who get it a little bit more than some other clubs.
Yes, big time. Speaking of, you mentioned Arteta then and him not being able to win. It does seem like he is viewed so differently. And he doesn't help himself sometimes. I know that some of the things that he says, I wish he wouldn't. The Champions League lost to PSG, for example, it was as good as I've seen us play in that opening 20-25 minutes. I was so proud of that effort in Paris. We were phenomenal. But afterwards, when he said it, and then he doubled down later about that we were the best team in Europe, it's just little moments like that I wish he wouldn't say. Having said all of that, speaking of Liverpool and Arne Slot, he's making some weird comments lately. Do you feel like, is that being covered? Is that being exposed quite rightly? If Arteta said that thing about he started to give percentages of how many set piece goals the top team has scored, clearly, obviously, in reference to Arsenal. If Arteta said that, or if Arteta said that thing recently, I'm just paraphrasing here, something along the lines that Liverpool don't cheat. So if a player goes down holding their head, then you'd like to think that referees would stop the game. Well, it was something to that effect. I might have completely botched that up. I'm sorry if I have. I'm just paraphrasing that. It's just, if Arteta said some of this stuff, it'll be plastered everywhere.
So I think there's two factors to that. I think there's the mainstream media, and they have their favourites. And I'm not even going to use Arteta as an example, because this is an Arsenal podcast and very easy for us to come across as biased, right? So I'm going to use Mourinho as an example. If Mourinho had said the percentage thing about the corners and stuff like that, I think they would have, you know, the typical reaction to that from the media would be, oh, Mourinho knows his stuff, you know, he's thinking about all the little details. But if someone like Ange Postecoglou had said that, or someone who has an identity or something like that, that they maybe don't like, don't agree with, don't have respect for, then it's really covered in a weird way. And it's something they talk about on the Arsenal Vision podcast all the time, and I fully agree with it. It's the winner's tax. If you've won, you can kind of say what you want and get away with it. Arne Slot has won.
Yep.
You think it was Arne Slot's influence or Jurgen Klopp's team was just guided by Arne Slot and it all came together for them? That's a completely different conversation, isn't it?
But exactly.
You know, I think if Arteta goes and wins, he will get covered very, very differently, because all of a sudden, you know, the comment that you mentioned there about being the best team in Europe, that changes from he's deluded, he doesn't know what he's talking about, he's not seeing the real facts, to that changes to a kind of, well, he kept his team going. You know, he was talking to his team at that point, and we just have to go and win. If we want to change the narratives, we have to get it over the line. And it is a bit ridiculous, isn't it? Because it could swing, as we saw two seasons ago, on a chance against Aston Villa for Leandro Trossard, or the odd decision here and there. And that's what changes the whole reaction to everything Arteta says. So we've got to go and win if we want to control the narrative. The thing I would say is, you know, you made that question about, is it being covered? Not so much by the mainstream media, but I think the fan media from other clubs has definitely picked up on Arne Slot's comments. Very strange. I don't know. I've defended Arteta for strange comments before, so maybe I think they're odd comments, but I'm not going to launch into him for it again, probably because he's won, you know. I want to see Arsenal win, hopefully, very, very soon. And that will change how Arteta's covered, I think.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, absolutely. And we're so damn close now. We're on the cusp of something. And it'll change completely the narrative. Just a moment ago, you're referring to Trossard, the Aston Villa. You're referring to that Martinez save?
I think Martinez saved it.
Or I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yes, I know what you mean. And just how that was the only blemish, really. That was the only loss in that that late season run when we went 16-1-1, and just what could have been. And I think that's been a real snapshot of Arsenal and why we have built what we have, how we've invested since, because that particular match was wedged in between the two Bayern Munich legs in that tie, and we had, you know, we had a disappointing result at home. We probably lost that tie overall in 15 minutes when they came to the Emirates. And then that weekend, we had to sort of dust ourselves off, and we weren't able, unfortunately, to get the win over Aston Villa. And then midweek, we bowed out in Munich. Mm. So all of a sudden, you can set yourself up for greatness. You can work your tail off for 8 months, but then one bad week, unfortunately, can be the difference between, well, we exited two competitions effectively. Yeah. I know Arsenal did amazingly well to take it to the final day, but unfortunately, we arrested the momentum. And City don't lose from that position. They've proved that time and time again under Pep. They go on those unrelenting runs, and unfortunately, once we sort of conceded the lead position, we weren't able to claw it back. So I think since then, I think what Arsenal doing is preparing themselves for that week, it's going to come in March, then come in April, May, how we can navigate key European ties against the real big boys, the real powerhouses, and as well, not take our eye off the ball on the weekend in the Premier League. That's what I think the club has done.
Yeah. And hey, I think we've already seen it a little bit against Atletico Madrid. Can you imagine Arteta changing a whole side of a team? I know it's only two changes, but in Arteta's world, he's changed the whole left-hand side in his selection for Atletico Madrid. A really, really big game. And he's done it, and they've both really showed up. I thought it was one of Martinelli's best games for a long, long time. And Miles Lewis-Skelly was brilliant again. So we have this... The depth is something I've never seen before as an Arsenal fan. Maybe I've seen better first 11s.
Yeah,
I think you could argue the 04 team, 04, 05. You know, the team in that era, maybe a better first 11, but not a better squad. Yeah. Definitely not a better squad. 100%. There was just less demands back then, wasn't there?
100%. Yes. Yeah. It's just a completely different dynamic now to Arsenal. And what I love is that the players seem so engaged. Right, the play seems so. That even you look at Martinelli, for example, who's been a nailed on starter on the, you know, for a few seasons now. He's been one of the mainstays since Arteta took over. There's no real, you don't hear anything from them. There's a very cohesive, tight knit group. It seems like they're all pulling in the same direction. Whereas just a few years ago, of course, we had a fractured club, a fractured dressing room, maybe the egos and. That stuff just got a bit, a bit out of control. And step by step, what we've built now is that the players are all engaged. They're all up for it. I love watching the goal reactions from different angles. Bench cam. There's a cracking angle of Calafiori celebrating Gyökeres's. He's on the sidelines. Well, have you seen this?
You're not in your head, mate. So good.
Yeah. It was amazing. And that's just one example. I could cite dozens of them, that the players are so engaged, like they're so willing for their teammates wanting to succeed, because I mean, it sounds so simple, doesn't it? But if the players do well, if the players succeed, the team does. And there's that shared vision now it's so palpable.
Mm. And you're right to cite the celebrations. The thing that made me think, wow, we are onto something with this group of players is, do you remember when Gabriel Saliba signed their contracts and that story came out about them chatting about it? Like, are we going to do this together? Like, are you going to sign? Good. Am I going to sign? Yes. And I just, that made me think, wow, like, these guys are not just teammates. They are fully invested in each other.
Yes.
They have this commitment to one another. Like, if you're going to sign, I'm going to sign because we'll go and win stuff. Yeah, there's always going to be that element of they're in a good position for their career, you know? So, like, why not double down on that for themselves? But I just thought when that story came out, I was like, wow, this group are so together. They are willing to kind of sign on the dotted line, sign years of their career to Arsenal.
Absolutely.
Based on what others are doing. You know, they believe in each other. And another celebration reaction, Rav, that we could reference is the celebrations from the other night. He seemed to shy away from them a little bit.
Yeah, I know he said he was embarrassed, wasn't he? Yes, yeah. That first one.
And they were pushing him out to go and take the celebrations for the first and the second and do the mask. And I absolutely love that. And they make a real big deal of each other, don't they? I remember Ødegaard did it with Charles Sago Jr. in a League Cup game.
Yes,
he made his debut.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he pushed him out to the fans.
Lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
Heartwarming stuff. Heartwarming. You're right. Gyökeres did look a bit sheepish, didn't he? Because it wasn't the most comprehensive, cleanest goal that he will ever score. But if anyone needed something just to change the momentum, it was him. I'm so glad. I'm so glad for him. And clearly, the way that the players got around him, it speaks volumes. And just like you referenced before as well, Saliba recommitting, it is enormous. I know you've spoken about it at length, and so have I. It's not lost on me, though, that for all the talk around Arsenal, how much longer can they keep this group together? 3 second place finishes, the players will want to, you know, move elsewhere to meet their ambitions, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the players tell you everything. They tell you everything in their actions. We have had a pretty much, touch wood, 100% track record in renewing key players. And we worked all through the squad, basically. And soon, hopefully, Bukayo will be finalised in due course. It doesn't seem to be any, cause for concern around that. That'll just take its natural course. And then we're almost getting back to the start. We're getting back into the territory of renewing the likes of Rice and Timber, et cetera. Like these are in the relative, I guess, Arsenal current iteration, these are relatively new players who have entered the cycle just a couple of seasons ago. And this is such a beautiful time to be an Arsenal fan. The way they talk about what we're trying to do, the way they talk about each other and the manager, that there's that shared belief. I'm getting excited just thinking.
It's kind of wild, isn't it? You know, because I remember times where we're sat there thinking, well, who's going to take our best player this summer? You know, Manchester City doing it, a Barcelona doing it, you know, and actually it would be months of anxiety until the transfer window closed. And then you're like, oh, phew. Okay, don't have to worry about that until January.
Exactly.
Now, we don't really have that. Like, players are committing and it's great. I love it. I love the fact that we've got the two HLN boys down as well.
Yes.
Wanyeri and Miles Lewis-Skelly. That's really important to me. Yeah. And I want to see Wanyeri play a little bit more, hopefully.
Yes.
Maybe not for any footballing reasons, you know, but just because I like him. And I like
100%. Absolutely.
I like when the academy players come through. So I'd be keen to see a bit more of him. And you're absolutely right. The contract scenario and Andrea Berta and everything that's going on behind the scenes is being so well managed that you don't have scenarios like you got at Liverpool where Trent, Salah and Van Dijk were all out of contract, you know, in the same summer and they lost Trent and they've suffered for it. And we've been there. We know that pain. Hopefully Andrea Berta carries on in the way he has been.
Yes, it's been pretty outstanding across the board, the way we've been able to retain these key players. And just going back to Martinelli from earlier, he just comes in, and how good was that finish? It was incredible, incredible finish. I mean, the Lewis-Skelly run was just phenomenal. He was doing that a few times towards the back end of last season. It just seems like a while since we've seen it, of course, because his minutes have been a bit impacted this season so far, but they're all going to get their time to shine. And what I love is that even though the players are coming in and out of the team rather than playing consecutive matches, the confidence is still there. So the way Arteta has been able to not stifle their natural game, it's a testament to his coaching and of course the character of the players, because when Lewis-Skelly, where he received that ball in our own half, basically in that center circle, the way he's able to drive that forward, it's wild to think he's still 18, by the way. But you don't just do that coming in from the cold if you don't have the belief of your manager, if you don't have the belief of your teammates to play with that sort of freedom and confidence. It was a very symbolic goal because it was made by him and then, of course, finished off by Martinelli's beautiful finish. And these are the two players who basically just stepped in for this match. There's something that really encapsulates Arsenal's mentality right now in that goal.
Mm. And I think it goes back to what we're talking about the unity of the players. And I think players tell you everything with their actions, and the trust they have in one another is unbelievable. I remember watching Arsenal teams where you'd have a player on the right wing or maybe a centre back, and the ball would not go to them. Like they would, Mustafi would not get the ball in build up. Willian would not get the ball in build up. Like we would keep
bless
the ball
them both.
Away. Yeah, bless them. But
the way, just even reminiscing of those times, it just seems so long ago. It actually wasn't. It's not too long. In some ways, it's not. How far we've come though since. You're right. We would not give them the ball, and it was just that nervousness, that jittery edge, and those sort of fractures within the team. I mean, they're exploited to the maximum by other teams. Now, there's just. Whoever comes into the lineup, whenever the lineup is named, there's no fretting at all. It's just, cool. He gets his chance, or I see the logic in sitting him down because he's had a lot of minutes lately. And just like when Lewis-Skelly was named against Atleti and Calafiori sits down, I thought, he's played a lot of football, including international duty, and you got to manage him accordingly. And it's just. This is what we're going with. Look at that bench. We look at the options we have, and let's go get it done.
Quite. I think there's a really interesting point around Mikel Merino here, in the sense that he's the player who has given us the most kind of worry, in inverted commas,
yes,
this year when he's been played. And you could show many professional footballers Mikel Merino's career and they would snap your hand off for it. I think he's a Euro winners with Spain this year. Yeah. You know, in 2025, he scored goals for fun for both club and country.
Leading goal scorer, and yep.
Yeah. And when he gets selected, we're all like, ooh, not sure about that. You know,
yes.
And back in the day, we would have killed for a Mikel Merino, like to be our first 100%. Choice. The level is at another, and just completely another place. And we're very lucky. So hopefully we win something, but we have to remember to enjoy it whilst we're in it.
Yes.
And whilst we're watching 4-0s against Atletico Madrid. No one does that to Atletico Madrid, but we did.
That's right. And in all fairness to them, I think the end scoreline didn't quite do it justice. I think they were a hell of a lot better than 4-0 suggests. If you just saw that scoreline on paper, you'd think that it was an absolute demolition job by Arsenal for the full 90 minutes plus. It actually wasn't. We had a bit of fortune go our way, which I most certainly welcome, by the way. We've had a lot of bad luck otherwise. So when Alvarez hits the crossbar, for example, when Raya had that moment of moment of madness, you know, on another day, another night, it's a very different result. It's a very different scoreline that we're contending with. So I'm glad that the result went in our favour. However, it's just a reminder that nothing is given. Nothing is guaranteed. You've got to go out there and earn it. And when we finally got that first goal, how good's the delivery, by the way? Declan Rice's set piece taking him, Saka consistently delivering at that level, and Gabriel. I mean, did you see that? Speaking of Gabriel, did you see that picture of him? He's got, like, I think there's five players around him at a corner. The level of worry around Gabriel.
I've not seen that. No. I'll have to go find that.
I'll send it to you, Mark. I'll WhatsApp it to you. If I was a bit more tech savvy, I'd risk trying to share my screen, but there's every chance I will blow the whole thing up. It was phenomenal. Like, such is the level of concern and worry around Arsenal and set pieces, and Gabriel in particular. He's an absolute machine. He's ruthless. They had five players essentially man marking him, and they still can't stop him. He's assisting goals now as well, that he's getting to the front post. So this evolution of Arsenal's set pieces, I know we talk about Nicolas Jova a lot and just being able to refresh things and keep teams guessing, there's a level of expertise and care in terms of coaching, analysis, tactics, that Arsenal are looking for every single fine margin to unlock. And boy, are we doing it well so far.
Yeah, I mean, the set pieces specifically have, I think we're at 9 set piece goals this year, if I'm remembering that right.
Okay.
That's wild, considering the number of games that we've played. But it is just one of those things where, I don't know, it's like you say, it is something that we can exploit and work on and get an advantage with. So why wouldn't we? And we're seeing more and more teams go to the long throw, go to, you know, trying to be good from set pieces. You would be a fool not to try and score goals when you get handed an opportunity. And especially a team like Arsenal, who have so much territorial domination and therefore get so many set pieces in good positions.
Yes, that's right.
Why wouldn't you? Like, it's if a team is going to go sit in a low block against us, which they are more than entitled to do, by the way, I've never ever questioned that. If that's their best way of getting a result, they should be able to do that and not be criticized. But then we have to find a solution to that, and set pieces is part of it. You're right, Declan Rice's delivery on that free kick was lost for words for how good he is. I've spoken a lot about Timber this year, Zubimendi, Gabriel, how good they've been. I've hyped up Martinelli a fair bit. I feel like I haven't spent enough time on Declan Rice, who is quietly having such a good season. And we've just come to expect it from him. Like, he's just that good. And that delivery now feels, you know, like an every game occurrence, which it shouldn't be. It was world class.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that you feel you're not talking enough about him. I feel the same about Zubimendi. Just each and every match, he just does Zubimendi things. And I keep glossing over the fact of just how well he's slotted in and just what he's given Arsenal in that position and how he's allowed us to really, I think transform's too strong of a word, but we've changed shape in midfield, yeah. Right? We've been able to have the freedom of a more traditional 10, Odegaard or now Eze ahead of him. Like he's been able to lock down that position where we've moved away from, I guess, that classical 4-3-3 that Arteta's otherwise known for. Zubimendi's phenomenal. Even just the other night, I mean, I know it doesn't count for anything now because it didn't register as an assist, but the way he was able just to collect the ball, dink it over the top to open that space up for Gyökeres, he's just such a threat. He's just, even in the attacking realm, it's just a beautiful technical football that's given so much to Arsenal so far.
Yeah, and I presume when you're saying collect the ball and flick it to Gyökeres, you're talking about yes. The one where he's back to... Yeah, that was awesome. Yep. He's also 100%. He was also involved in the second goal, the ball to Martinelli for the cross that eventually ends up with Gyökeres. He yep. Was it the West Ham game where Timber earns the penalty? That was a wonderful pass from Zubimendi.
Absolutely, yeah.
Such Big a time. Good ball. I'm yep. totally with you. He has allowed us to change, and I think one thing I'm noticing from Timber a lot this year is his attacking output is through the roof. Like he has gone nuclear on his final third yes. contributions for a right back. Yep. And I think that is because of Zubimendi. Like you say, he yep. is a, if Declan Rice is the, you know, the charging bull who just is going to run everyone over and run you down, Zubimendi is the kind of, he's the little fly who is just constantly at people, buzzing around them, giving them difficulties, making their life difficult. And his ability to read the game, defend in that kind of way is allowing Timber to just go, well, I'll just leave that space. You and Saliba have got that. Yep. That's fine.
Absolutely.
And Saka looks better for it. Gyökeres yes. looks slightly better for it. So there's tons of, it's amazing the knock-on effect one player can have. Yes. And I'm so with you. I think he is brilliant. And I'm so glad we have him and Liverpool don't have him. Liverpool needed,
yes,
Liverpool didn't
right.
need Alexander Isak and Hugo Ekitike this summer. They needed Zubimendi and they needed their
yes.
version of Timber. And they didn't go and get either of them.
The centre half, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it just remains to be seen how much they're going to be able to cope with that over the course of the season. The mention of Timber as well and Rice, it actually just got me thinking, is that how many players do we look at now who have improved so much from when they signed? So take Rice, for example. We've just been lauding his set pieces, quite rightly, of course. He didn't have that really in his locker when he joined Arsenal. Look, I admit my limitations here. I'm very much Arsenal focused. I don't really watch much else football or follow other clubs, mostly just as a matter of time as well. Mm-hmm. I invest 100% into Arsenal. So to the best of my knowledge, he wasn't really doing that for England or West Ham, that sort of set piece delivery. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, to be fair, he wasn't even doing it for us when he first arrived, was it? It was the
exactly.
the season after that got introduced.
Yes.
And I think it's a real trait of a lot of these Arsenal players where Saka's a great example. We all used to think, oh, Saka's not great on his right foot. He always goes inside. And then one season, he just came back and just started going right all the time. And we were like, wow, that's good. Then we were going, well, he doesn't really get in the back post and score headers. I think he's had one or two every season since. So, you know, players like Saka, Rice, and actually, to be fair, all the Arsenal players, you could say
yep.
exactly what I just said about Timber and his attacking output and his sense for runs and his sense for underlaps. He didn't have that last year. Now, yeah, Zubimendi's facilitating it, but he had to go away and work on that this summer. And I think
yeah,
this
exactly.
is something Arteta, Albert Stuyvesant, I never say his name right. Stuyvesant,
I believe. Yeah, yeah. It took me a long time to nail that. Yep.
These guys are drilling this into the players of what is your weakness and go away and sort it, or what can you get better at? And Declan Rice's set-piece deliveries absolutely is one of them. His box presence is another one that he added over time, wasn't it? So, yeah, we're so lucky that we've got a coaching setup that can spot
yes.
these things, spot these opportunities, and help the players do that.
100%. And Arteta would never outrightly just come out and take credit for it. Of course, I don't think he's ever going to admit that publicly. He would say all the right things if it's put to him. In fact, I think it was recently people were he was asked about Mikel Merino's scoring exploits for Spain and how much is that, you know, as a byproduct of him joining Arsenal under Arteta's coaching or something to that effect. And of course, he's not going to come out and say it. But there is one of the wild things that always seems to just baffle me is that there's still a question mark over Arteta, even within Arsenal, the Arsenal fan base. If you look at where he has brought the team back to, we're on the precipice of something great here. Is that, and you look at his track record of coaching, how many players have improved under his system? You hear it so often in the players' interviews that when, before joining Arsenal, when they're having conversations with Mikel, they're blown away by his knowledge, his passion, his vision for them, how he sees them fitting into the team and stuff that they otherwise wouldn't think about. I mean, there's a host of examples. I think Eze is one of the most recent. He's referenced that as well, that they want to come work with him. They want to come and work with Arteta to improve their own game as well. And it's wild how there's still this question mark about, is Arteta the man for, Is he the man right now for Arsenal? The reality is that Arsenal wouldn't be where we currently are placed if it weren't for him. His fingerprints are all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the question I would always ask anyone who says that they're Arteta out is, okay, well, who would you get in? Like, because yeah. I don't see another manager across Europe who, there are other great managers across Europe, by the way, but who are as connected to Arsenal as Mikel Arteta is, with the level of coaching ability, sense for games, you know, everything that he's got as a manager. Yes, you could replicate it in an Ancelotti, in an Enrique. Of course you could. There are other great managers, like I say. But can you replicate it with the connection and the desire to win for Arsenal? It's not out there. Look, there's a world where we don't win anything this year. We've got to be really, really cognizant of that. We're favourites, I think, and I think we're in a good position. And we have a great squad and all of the stuff that we've spoken about today. But there's a world where this goes wrong. And there's a world where Isak goes nuclear for Liverpool and they just outscore everyone and there's nothing we can do about it. I'm still Arteta in that scenario, you know, unless something goes terribly wrong, because I can't think of a manager who would be more determined to put that right. We can't be Arteta in forever if things don't change. But
agreed.
Look at the actions that he's taken or helped the club take this summer. The direction that we're going is built around him, is built around his energy, his love for the club, his desire to win with Arsenal. And you don't get quotes like the one we spoke about with Saliba and Gabriel before, sorry, without him setting that level, setting that standard, setting that desire to win at Arsenal. He's the center of that, and we can't, you know, we can't preemptively get rid of that vibe, that energy.
No one wants to win more than him. I've said that before, and it comes from the top down. They want this more than anyone, and that's exactly who you want in that position. You want someone reflecting that ambition that we all have, because it's been too long. It's just been way too long since Arsenal have won the Premier League. I wish I'd appreciated it more. That era, that late 90s, early 2000s era. You may or may not have even been born yet, mate.
No, I was there. I was about.
No, everyone seems young to me these days when you hit my age, my vintage. But it was, I kind of took it for granted that Arsenal are always going to be up and around there. Even when we didn't win it, we finished, help ourselves to an FA Cup as well. Back in that era. So it's really, really exciting times for Arsenal. Keep an eye on the time, Mark. How are you placed, mate, before we get to the Crystal Palace preview?
I've probably got 10 more minutes, so that would be all good. Yeah,
fantastic, perfect amount of time. So getting to this weekend and pretty much encapsulating what we've been talking about, how do Arsenal keep the momentum going, keep eyes on the prize. We've had a huge European night, of course, fantastic, but it's straight back to business this weekend, hosting Crystal Palace, who look, they're an excellent team. I really like them. I've just always liked them as a club. Similar to Fulham last weekend, I don't want them to do well, and I don't want some of their players to do well, of course, for one weekend only. But what do you think in terms of rotation selection for this one, Mark? Who do you think anyone will come in?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I think Calafiore will be back. I think he's just playing too well, isn't he? From there, I can't see the back four changing. Palace are such a good side. I think Arteta will go as strong as he can. I guess the only question is Martinelli or Trossard, right? For me, it's really tricky. It will all depend on the game plan. And I think Arteta's game plan will probably be centered around kind of stopping counterattacks at source. You know, he does not like getting into basketball matches with teams, and Palace can run, Palace can play direct, Palace can get that ball up to Mateta and play off of him really, really well. So I think
he's a real handful as well, by the way. Yep, he's
100%.
He's enjoyed a lot of success against Arsenal. He's an absolute beast.
Yeah, beast is the perfect word to describe Mateta. So I think it will be built around stopping counters at source. And I guess it's where Arteta will think the threat will come from. Does he think that they'll pop it down the wings and try and get in there, in which case you might pick Martinelli? Or does he want more central presence, you know, a player coming inside on the ball so that for our rest defence, they're already in that kind of internal spot to get in and around Adam Wharton? Either way, I think you've got a good choice on that side. I think he will probably lean towards Trossard to do that kind of internal, being in and around him, and then Gyökeres, Trossard, maybe Rice can all go and step on Adam Wharton and stop them from creating anything, really. I think that's probably the way he'll go. Otherwise, I can't see anyone coming in. I think we have a slightly easier run after that. I can't remember the exact fixtures, but I think it will be the Cup game, which will obviously have some rotation. Sparta Prague in Champions League, Burnley.
I believe it's the Cup match that you refer to that you're going to as well.
I should know.
I think, you should.
I should know.
Yeah, I think, and we've also, nice little quirk in the draw that we've got a 5-day break for this one. Mm. Palace play on Thursday, Europa League.
Oh, true.
Of course. Yeah. So we played on the Tuesday. We're at home on the Sunday. So 5-day break. I think it's where I'm going with this point is I think it's going to be very minimal rotation, if at all. Noting the match after it as well, that will be a good opportunity to sit down a number of key players. I can fully see for that Brighton EFL Cup match, Arteta making 9-10 changes like he did in the first round. But for this one, we just, unless there's a niggle or a knock or something, I think it's going to be pretty much full. Yep, touch wood, absolutely. I think it's going to be full strength. We've got players in form. I mean, Bukayo is looking just wonderful at the moment. I guess a question mark on, you know, can he do 390s in a week? I mean, that's only the club will know. But this is he's been building in the last few matches. His minutes, I think him playing for England as well has helped keep that momentum and keep his minutes going. He's looking sharp. You know, best case scenario that we can put this game away and in second half sit down some of the likes of Bukayo and whatnot. But otherwise, I think it's going to be pretty much full strength, because we look, as again, without coming across as too entitled or whatever, but I want the Premier League. We can't now drop points against, with all due respect to Palace, we can't drop points in these matches.
Yeah. And I think you've touched on an interesting quirk of the Premier League this year. With there being 9 teams in Europe, there is suddenly that kind of change around whether a Champions League midweek fixture is something that can be exploited. If Palace were fresh coming into this, I'd be really, really worried. But you make a great point. Thursday, they're playing on Thursday because they're in the Conference League they're in, isn't it?
Oh, sorry.
I think it's Conference League. So the...
Yes, all that hoo-ha he did.
The hoo-ha,
in the
yeah. Terrible, terrible decision. But suddenly the clubs in the Champions League, we're less regularly going against teams who have had longer breaks than us. And that is a weird quirk that might help us with results like the Palace game and things like that. Hopefully it allows us to be fresher than our opposition more regularly, which is... it's great if you ask me. Like, that's fantastic. Totally with you. I think it will be a strong team and we'll probably rotate in the following fixtures. The next 3 games after that will be, we'll see a lot more of the whites, the Hincapiés, Hopefully. No, it's too early for Havertz, isn't it? I'm just getting giddy that Havertz will be back. One of my favourite players.
Oh, he really is. I can't wait till he's back. I can't wait till I hear the waka waka again.
So good.
I love it. He's so well respected and adored within the Arsenal fan base. I mean, again, like, it's just a player that just still has that question mark over him. I don't get it. It's just, if you look at...
Strange.
Sure. He has his flaws. I mean, everyone does, right? We're all human. However, you just look at the pure numbers. You look at Arsenal's points per game. Him in versus being out, it speaks for itself. He's so integral to Arsenal's system. I don't know if the club's ever put a timeline on it, but he's probably due back in that same block of time that Odegaard is, late November-ish, maybe early December, yeah. Which would be great because the fixtures, well, they already are, but especially that Christmas, New Year, January period, 3 days a week. It's where our season pretty much unraveled last year. So there's going to be so much football for all of them. There's so many minutes to play, and he's going to feature very heavily.
Oh, absolutely. I think if he hadn't been injured, we'd have seen a lot more of him. Obviously, yeah. That's an obvious thing to say, but I mean is Gyökeres wouldn't have been, you know, the only player.
Yep.
I think there would have been a lot more rotation there, and Havertz would have been really key. He would have started a lot of games. I think there's a lot of players, actually. You know, we've already missed so many players. Madueke is one. You know, we were just talking about, can Saka do nice? Well, at the moment he's having to, because Nonny Madueke is not fit. The Odegaard stuff has been so frustrating, because I think when we have seen him, he's looked absolutely brilliant this year, especially against Olympiacos and the little bit that he played against.
At his best,
Was
he
it
ran
Newcastle?
That show.
Yeah. So
yes, he came on the last 12 minutes in that sort of patch. He changed the match.
Changed the match entirely. So, you know, for all the positives, we're dealing with negatives at the same time. We're dealing with problems. And this is why we've got a big squad now. This is why, like you say, Christmas is going to be key for us, and getting those changes and the movements between the games really right. And I go back to what you were talking about earlier. Players can come in seamlessly and perform at a high level and work together really, really well. Again, comes from the coaches, comes from the manager, comes from the work we do on the training pitch. We're going to need that come Christmas.
Yeah. And I think the way Arteta's been able to have that buy-in from them all, it's a testament to him, testament to the character as well of the players, knowing that their time will come. And when it's their turn, do it to the best of their ability. I think it's been a great, great time to be an Arsenal
it is.
Fan. I'm just, I'm really, really dreaming big this season.
Yeah, it's so exciting. It's so exciting. And I'm really trying to live in the moment and enjoy games as they come and not stress too much. Because a result will go not our way. Probably pretty soon, you know, there will be a result we don't like. We are not going to win every single game from now to the rest of the season. We need to be ready for that. So let's make sure that we really enjoy the purple patches that we're in. And hopefully we continue that against Crystal Palace with a nice resounding victory. I'm going to go 2-0. And I think Gyökeres will score again, maybe get one of them. So it's all very exciting.
You heard it here first. 2-0, that would have been my prediction too, mate. That would be an excellent result heading into next week, and we can hopefully sit down some players midweek. So what do you reckon, Mark? We've just hit the hour mark. Should we bring this one to a close?
Let's get it out for everyone.
Fantastic. It's been so good having you on, Mark. I mean, you and I chatted offline as well. It's solo podcasting. It's difficult. I'm just so often just staring at myself.
Yeah.
In the reflection, right, on the screen. It's not the same actually having a conversation with a genuine, passionate Arsenal fan, and we just so happen to have it recorded. It's been really, really awesome having you.
No, thank you for having me. I'm exactly the same boat, sick of staring at myself. So nice to have a conversation and nice to have questions and kind of things to work with. It's great. And you clearly love the club, Rav, all the way from Australia, which is awesome.
Mate, thank you so much. Heartwarming stuff, Mark. But let's do it again soon. I'd love to return the favor if you'd ever want me on your show. It's been so good, and let's keep this good thing going, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely. Up the Gunners.
Absolutely. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mark. I'm going to bring this one to a close. Look after yourselves, everyone. Check in with your loved ones. All of Mark's information links will be in the show notes. Please go check out his content. Brilliant, brilliant content creator. And I wish him all the best. So look after yourselves, everyone. And I'll be back on to chat, hopefully, after a nice, easy 3 points against Crystal Palace on the weekend. Until take care and come on, Arsenal.